Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, February 16th, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading in chapter 2 of, it's 2 Timothy, hold on, you know, 1 Peter chapter 2. So, read by Alexander Scorby. And I didn't set that up, so hang on, let me set that up.
Chapter 2. Wherefore, laying aside all malice, and all guile, and hypocrisies, and envies, and all evil speakings, as newborn babes, desire the sincere milk of the word, that ye may grow thereby, if so be ye have tasted that the Lord is gracious. To whom coming, as unto a living stone, disallowed indeed of men, but chosen of God and precious, ye also, as lively stones, are built up a spiritual house, and holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. Wherefore also it is contained in the Scripture, Behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious, and he that believeth on him shall not be confounded. Unto you therefore which believe, he is precious. But unto them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders disallowed, the same is made the head of the corner, and a stone of stumbling, and a rock of offense, even to them which stumble at the word, being disobedient, whereunto also they were appointed. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, an holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme, or unto governors, as unto them that are sent by him, for the punishment of evildoers, and for the praise of them that do well. For so is the will of God, that with well-doing ye may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. As free, and not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God. Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. For this is thankworthy, if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. For what glory is it, if when ye be buffeted for your faults, ye shall take it patiently? But if when ye do well and suffer for it, ye take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously, who his own self bare our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, being dead to sins, should live unto righteousness. by whose stripes ye were healed. For ye were as sheep going astray, but are now returned unto the shepherd and bishop of your souls.
All right, Jen, do we have any questions this week? By the way, the queue is open. Anybody wants to get in it, star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone, and should be a button if you're on an app or browser. Jen, you're muted if you're talking. Jen, we're not hearing you. Anybody hearing Jen or anybody hearing me?
yeah, you, not Jen. It looks like his microphone wasn't there. Now it's muted.
Mm-hmm. We'll give him a few seconds. There we go. He's unmuted now. Try, Jen. Yeah, we're not hearing anything. If you're talking, maybe your mic is muted or something else place. Maybe on your computer.
Let me check.
There you go. Just heard something.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
Okay.
Okay. We have several questions.
Hang on a second. You're coming. Yeah, you got some feedback. You don't have. You didn't come in twice, did you?
No.
All right. I didn't hear the feedback this time. Try again. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't hear it anymore either.
Yeah, you good.
So, I think we have three questions. I'm not sure what you want to do with it. Let's take the easy ones first.
All right.
The first one is, if one had a book that they were selling online and then finds that it is being sold on eBay without their consent, what can or must they do at this point?
Well, that's a good question. You know, it depends on if they had it copyrighted. If they wrote the book, they could prove that they wrote the book and someone else wrote it in their place. I've had the same thing happen to me. I've got a book that, you know, I did have up on the website. It was a handbook, and someone downloaded it and then went up and put it up on Amazon and is selling it, and it's doing pretty good, I hear. And I can't get a hold of the person or get information on the person that did that, so a lawsuit, of course, is the necessary thing. I tried talking with Amazon, and they just refused to give me the information, so I have no one to sue. Maybe I should try to spend more time. Maybe I should sue Amazon, you know? Actually, it's not actually Amazon. I think it's a sub-company or something of Amazon that actually does that, but I have to look into it myself. But that's what you could do. If eBay will cooperate with you and give you the information on the individual that stole your book, you can sue them. That's the best thing you can do. Again, I don't have any more information. That's all they wrote, right, Jen?
Yes, that's it.
So that's about it. All right, next question, I guess.
Okay, I forwarded this one to you, John. This is from Linda, and it's stuff that she's doing on the notice and demand. Was she on last week and talked about that? Anyway.
I believe it was, Linda.
Yeah.
She's been on 2 weeks in a row talking about it. And
yeah.
But go ahead. I didn't see it. When did you get it and when did you forward it? Because I didn't see that.
Oh, a couple of days ago I sent you a copy.
Okay. You go ahead.
If you don't have the notice and demand and the other document, if you don't have the email, there's not much you can do with it.
Yeah, so what did they do? They sent a copy of the notice and demand. They're going to file?
Yes, and I think they had one other filing there with it, too. I think there were two documents that attached. I can see if I can find it quick.
How many pages was it, do you know?
Notice and demand was only 3.
Okay. And then there was probably an affidavit with it?
Well, let's see. Nope, this one only had the notice and demand.
All right, well, I'll look for it between now and next Monday, and if I can get a hold of it, I'll take a look and see once. Maybe I'll comment on it. But the notice and demand is quite simple. It's very direct, and all you have to do is take the framework that we put up there under Education Starts Here. They can find it, and I know that she knows where that's at. And then just make it yours. It's just that simple. Put your facts, your information, your details, and your demands in there. And the key thing is just making sure you don't eliminate anything. I think there's 8 points that need to be covered in that, if I recall. And just follow the framework. So, okay, is there another question you said?
Yes, that I forwarded you at 3:36 this afternoon. Now, the forward doesn't have the attachment with it. Let me see when it actually came into me and probably to you.
Well, I haven't checked my email since this morning, so...
Okay. Well, it came in this morning. Okay. The other one is very long, about 2.5 pages.
Well, we can't go reading through it. Give me the basics. Maybe I read it.
Okay. Let me go back and look at my email again. It came in at 7:38 tonight.
Oh, okay. Then
I'm sure you didn't see it. Yeah.
No, I didn't. I mean, can you summarize anything? I mean, you can't be reading that many pages.
No, I didn't get a chance to read through it either.
Okay. All right, well, we'll try to deal with it later or tomorrow. If we have time later, if we don't have people in the queue, then we'll do it later. We'll see where we go with that. Is there anything else, any announcements or anything?
No, that's the end of it for tonight, John.
Okay. All right, what I think I'm going to do is I did another recording. It's a PowerPoint recording like I had done last week, but this one is on government by consent. I've been thinking about this a little bit, and I'd like to get, the purpose of what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance is to teach people how to have government by consent. And, of course, I wrote a book on that called Government by Consent, 550 pages, I believe it was. I know I maxed out. I think it was only a page or two short from being too long. So we put together a really nice book. You can find that under the Welcome tab and come down to Books by John Darash, and you would find a copy of that book right there, Government by Consent. And if you clicked on that information, picture there, you'll get the information on Government by Consent and basically a lot of information on what that book is about. And it's a hardcover book, 8.5 by 11, so it's a pretty big book on the one hand. I did it hardcover because it needs to be used as a reference book. And it's 550 pages, so it's pretty thick. And I was just breezing through it, preparing for tonight in case we needed to kind of cover subject matter or something. And I was looking at some of the handbooks. I was going to do one of the handbooks, but then I thought, wait a second here. I started looking through the Government by Consent, and I looked at the foreword for that. And I think it's pretty informative. Hopefully we'll kind of remind people who've been with us for a while what we're doing here on the one hand, and kind of fill in a lot of the gaps for people who are new and haven't been around long enough that to understand what we're doing and to really see what our potential is. Trump is working very hard in his administration. I'm very impressed with all the people that he chose for his administration. Rubio did a really great speech over the weekend here, out there in Europe, and even got a standing ovation, no less, from the people who were really focusing in on the New World Order, and he was bringing them back to reality. And anybody who hasn't seen that speech, you need to go look it up on YouTube and listen to it. I think it's about 29 minutes long. But let me tell you, it's really packed with some great information, really very uplifting, very historical. One of the best speeches I've heard. I mean, I've heard a couple other good speeches, of course, but this is right there on the top with a few others that I've heard. in my lifetime anyway. So it's a number one speech and really good. But anyway, what I think we're going to do tonight is about 40 minutes long. And I just finished recording this today, so it's kind of like last week. It's kind of a test. I haven't sat back to listen to it. But pretty much most of what I had, what I put together really was reading, so I shouldn't have too much of a problem with it. Maybe a few problems with some of my pronunciation. But I can go back and fix that because I haven't posted it up on YouTube. I'm going to post it on YouTube. And for a couple of things. First of all, it's going to get exposure to the people who have been listening for a while and really need to hear the whole message of the power and the authority of we the people and what we can do to save this nation. You know, Trump can't do this alone. He needs people. He needs an educated people. He needs people who understand and know what's going on and understand and know what needs to be done. And that is the key. And therein is the reason for National Liberty Alliance, and therein is the reason for writing this book, Government by Consent. Now, the other thing is I've made this book super cheap, you know, so there's not much profit here. For the book of its size, for $39.95, I mean, let me tell you, you'd spend $80, $100, even more for a book of this thickness and maybe of this topic and so on. You know, it does focus in on the law on the one hand, but it's the natural law. It's not the boring law. It's not civil law. It's not codes and statutes. It's the real law. It's common sense. That's the law. Natural law is common sense with an eye on justice. A collection of maxims dealing with and the facts of a case or a situation. But in any event, you know, by people purchasing the book, they not only get a great book and get a good education, but they also are supporting National Liberty Alliance, so we make a few dollars on that book. And we need both. We need the support, financial support, on the one hand, and we need, of course, people to get educated on the other hand. Because, again, Trump can set the stage, get us back on course, and fix a lot of our problems, but he can't really totally save the republic. That's up to the people. It takes the people involvement. The Constitution is not going to protect itself. The people need to do that. The people in government are not going to behave unless you make them behave. Always power draws a lot of psychopaths or sociopaths, and they will get away with anything they can get away with. And if we don't understand what these people are supposed to be doing when we put them into the offices that we put them in, then they're going to get away with murder. And they have been for a long time. But anyway, I'm going to play this. It's good education. I want to get it out onto YouTube and Rumble. Of course, this program will be going out on YouTube and Rumble. But I'd like to get it broken away. Like I said, it's about 45 minutes, I think. It's not too long. But it is under an hour, and then hopefully we'll get some conversation on this, because this is where our focus really should be here on a Monday night. We should be focusing in on the problems and the solutions, you know, really addressing the problems, and then trying to deal with the solutions for those problems. What America needs to really do, what the people really need to do of America in order to save our republic. And you have to understand our republic in order to save our republic. Okay, so hopefully people will have an appreciation for this, and we'll play the video here, and then we'll open up the queue. This is an introduction to the book Government by Consent by John Darash. You can find a link below where you can purchase this book on Amazon. Thomas Jefferson told us to educate and to inform the whole mass of people, that they are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. And if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. In questions of power, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution. The Preface. In America, the people govern, the people rule, and the people are sovereign. I was elected not to take power, but to give power to the American people where it belongs. If the righteous many do not confront the wicked few, then evil will triumph. President Trump. We, the people, have lost our way. Liberty's candle has waxed cold. The minions have woven a web of deceit, and the demagogues promised liberty while they themselves are the servant of corruption. Our servants have become our masters. They have cast their spell upon us, transforming the American dream into the New World Order nightmare. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Thomas Jefferson. This is more than a book. It's a plan. It's a roadmap from slavery to liberty. The purpose of this book and its supporting website, nationallibertyalliance.org, is to provoke we the people to action and arm them with education suitable and necessary for survival. Then we the people can tie down our government servants with the chains of the Constitution and bring them back under the consent. National Liberty Alliance is the only organization with a viable plan to return our servant government back under the Constitution and restore a republic. At the time of writing this book, President Trump, working with military intelligence, was dismantling the deep state and revealing the truth of all their worldwide evil and chaos to the sleeping populace, thus causing a huge power vacuum that the people must fill. It is up to the people to take back and secure the republic, as our elected representatives cannot. This requires arming yourself with the knowledge of our founding documents and nature's God. This is your wake-up call to arms. Power and authority. There is a war that has been raging since antiquity. It is a war for our hearts and our minds, for our flesh, for our very souls, to bring all mankind under a one-world order. As George Washington put it, orchestrated by a small group of cunning and ambitious and unprincipled men who have subverted the power of the people and usurped for themselves the reins of government. They have put in place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a small but artful and enterprising minority, to make the public administration the mirror of their ill-concerted and incongruous projects of faction, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interests. There are only two fundamental traditions of law and government that are active among humanity, each manifesting contrary ideals: the common law, also known as the natural law, and the civil law. Natural law rests upon justice administrated by scriptural principles that presupposes and guard against the inherent imperfections of human reasons. The civil law, on the other hand, justifies its method by presupposing and appealing to man's emotions of perfect reason. The common law tradition governs only a handful of countries, and it's fundamentally consonant with scriptures, acknowledging the divine eternality of law as the measures of all things. The civil law tradition, on the other hand, governs most modern nations and is fundamentally Babylonian, trusting human reasoning as the worthy measure of all things. The natural law tradition recognizes the necessity of human administration of law and government, while providing safeguards against man's weaknesses. Legislative laws of men change with the times, serves agendas, serves governments, demoralize men, are incapable of mercy, whereas God's law are the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. They serve God, serves man, benefits both victim and wrongdoer, provides for repentance, considers mercy, builds morals, and saves souls. Whereas unchained legislative laws serve the status quo and can never be just. In 1776, we the people ordained the Declaration of Independence, where we covenant with God, thereby we founded upon ourselves under the laws of nature's God, whereas he gifted us with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Common law provides that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to replace the god, present representatives and administrators, and restore the law of the land, thereby securing our safety and happiness. The 41st Congress, unbeknown by the majority, defrauded the people by the passing of the Organic Act of 1871, that the globalists believed created a state within a city, fraudulently transferring the control of Washington, D.C. to the deep state. Future Congresses, under the direction of the minions of the New World Order, also known as the American Bar Association, the ABA, continue to build acts and altered statutes upon the fraud. This transformed our unalienable rights to civil rights, our republic to a democracy, the United States to a corporation, and the laws of nature's God to civil and criminal laws, which have their roots in Babylon. This placed the United States under fiction of law, and as long as the people believe the fiction to be law, it is. These acts of Congress were without authority, and therefore all these unconstitutional statutes are null and void. And until the people understand and believe this, we cannot restore the republic. Perception changes everything, for reality is as one perceives, and the tyrants know it. The said act attempted to supplant our republican form of government that our servants were entrusted to guarantee. This criminally created a foreign venue, proceeding under fiction of law. Any court resting upon said act is a de facto court. Any judge acting under such fiction of law denies due process and is acting in excess of their judicial authority, in collusion under the color of law, thereby losing judicial immunity. Therefore, any judicial reliance upon said act is injudicious. The Federal Judicial Center, proceeding under the authority of 28 U.S.C. subsection 620, whose purpose, they claim, is to further the development and adoption of improved judicial administration in the courts of the United States. One of the center's main functions is to educate and train personnel of the judicial branch of the government, including but not limited to judges, United States magistrate judges, clerks of the court, probation officers, and persons serving as mediators and arbitrators. Presently, the center's governing board is chaired by Chief Justice of the United States, John G. Roberts, Jr. According to the Federal Judicial Center, in 1938, pursuant to its alleged authority under the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Among the changes wrought by the rules were the elimination of the federal courts, separate jurisdictions over suits in equity. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits of common law were grouped together under the term civil law, thereby subjecting common law to the will of the state. The ABA controlled the United States Supreme Court, and the ABA judiciary via Rule 2 stated, there is one form of action, the civil action, thereby committed treason and are guilty of seditious conspiracy by advocating and teaching the overthrowing of the government and insurrection against the law of the land. As per Black's law, law derives from precedent, from legislation, or custom under three categories. Number one, common law, subject to nature's God. Number two, equity, subject to a constitution written by the people. And number three, civil law, is subject to the state. Any law subject to a constitution written by the state is still civil law and not equity. The Constitution defines the law of the land as common law and equity, as the supreme law of the land, whereas the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or the laws of any state which includes rules to the contrary, notwithstanding. The ABA judiciary's dark reasoning for abolishing common law is because they claim that a rigid application of common law rules, also known as God's self-evident truths and maxims, brought about injustice. This is absurd, considering that God is just and merciful, and they are not, and therefore it follows that his laws is just and merciful. The truth of the matter is that common law sheds light on the ABA judiciary's dark deeds, thereby revealing their true intentions. As a result, bureaucrats fear the people via the light of the law, allowing liberty to flourish and thereby prevent the New World Order from filling the face of the world with their dark cities. We the people hold to Romans chapter 3, verse 4, let God be true, but every man a liar. Rules are not law. Rules are nothing more than prescribed conduct in a particular area. Congress was clear under 2072B in that such rules shall not abridge, enlarge, or modify any substantive right. All laws in conflict with such rules shall be of no further force or effect after such rules have taken place or effect. Therefore, under subsection 2072B, Rule 2 is of no further force or effect. Under said act, the 115th Congress enabled the United States Supreme Court the authority to prescribe rules. The United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary covertly abused that authority to conceal and abridge the supreme law of the land. It appears that judges who are expected to know the law need to be instructed in the law, whereas Congress alone was empowered under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18 to write laws in equity. Even Congress does not possess the power to abrogate the natural law. That jurisdiction belongs to God. So tell us, by what authority do these arrogant, tyrannical, seditious, ABA-indoctrinated judges think they can so act? Do they think that they are above God, that they can just change our natural law to civil law, which places the people under their merciless, destructive jurisdictions? Isaiah 43:10-11. Ye are my witnesses, saith Jehovah, and my servant who I have chosen, that ye may know and believe me, and understand that I am he. Before me there was no God formed, neither shall there be after me. I am Jehovah, and beside me there is no Savior. Thus saith the Lord, the King of Israel, and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts. I am the first, I am the last, and beside me there is no God. 1938 coup. The United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary claimed rules are thereby abrogating law and equity, placing God's natural law under their jurisdiction. The United States Constitution under their jurisdiction. All state constitutions under their jurisdiction. And we the people under their jurisdiction. This action is the very definition of a coup. In common law, the general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and the name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose since its unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principles follow that it imposes no duties, it confers no rights, it creates no office, it bestows no power or authority on anyone, it affords no protection and justifies no act performed under it. A void act can be legally consistent with a valid act. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law. Indeed, insofar as a statute runs contrary to the fundamental laws of the land, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. We, the sovereign people, ordained and established the federal government to serve the following six directives. Number one, to form a more perfect union, that is, to create a federal city, establish uniform naturalization rules, coin money, establish post offices, post roads, and legislate for counterfeiting and piracy laws. Number two, establish justice, create courts, secure habeas corpus. Congress may not impose an income direct tax, forbid bar attorneys from holding office, and prevent misconstruction of abuse of powers. Number three, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the militia, for the suppression of insurrection, and to repel invasions. Number four, provide for the common defense, raise and support armies, maintain a navy, and make rules for the land and naval forces. Number five, promote the general welfare, promote the arts and the sciences, make commerce regular, no taxes or duties on exports. Number six, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to guarantee a republican government, protect against invasion, and enforce the law of the land. Our Constitution provided for a government that the United States is as one unique nation, where no state is deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. But insidious factions within all three branches of our government have conspired over time and have succeeded in depriving every state its equal suffrage. This destroyed the balance of power between the states and the federal government through the fraudulent passing as the law the Republican 17th Amendment, a law specifically and explicitly forbidden by the Constitution itself. By Amendment 10, the people established that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor forbidden by to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. All legislation by Congress that was not delegated to them is null and void, and it is the duty of this Congress to read and understand our Constitution and start obeying it, because clearly they are not. And in the day of reckoning, ignorance of the law will not save them. The foundation of our Constitution is the Declaration of Independence, which states, whenever any form of government becomes destructive to our unalienable rights, such as life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and government by consent of the governed, it is the right of the people to remove from office, by indictment or recall, any elected, appointed, or hired servant who refuses to obey the law of the land. We, the people, have suffered a long train of abuses and usurpations by our government that perpetually pursued the same object, which revealed a design to reduce the people to living under absolute despotism. It is therefore our right and our duty to indict such tyrants and try them for treason in a court of justice. There is a hidden hand within our government that orchestrates events, controls our courts, and dictates subversive legislation through the insidious bar. America is in shambles, and our elected servants walk as blind men. These servants, holding elected and appointed offices within our Congress and judiciary and their federal weaponized agencies such as the IRS, the CIA, FBI, DHS, BLM, and the Department of Treasury, have denied us due process. They have abrogated the common law. They have created federal debtors' prisons via the IRS. They have robbed our homes through nonjudicial foreclosures. They have stolen our children in family court. They have stolen our parents and their estates in probate court. They have tainted every grand and federal and trial jury. They have created free speech zones. They have labeled patriots terrorists. They have destroyed our political process. They have stolen our free press. They have infringed upon our right to defend ourselves. They have destroyed our manufacturing base. They have chased 88% of the top Fortune 500 companies out of America. They have destroyed our economy. They have turned our dollar into a debt. They have robbed our silver and our gold. They have indoctrinated and demoralized our children with outcome-based education. They have opened our borders. They have used the FBI, the BLM, and other federal agencies to terrorize American ranchers, miners, and loggers in order to sell off America's resources to foreign countries for personal gain. They have sold our postal service to foreign corporations. They have brokered our electric company sales to foreign corporations. They have spied on we the people, intercepting and storing all our communications in case we become persons of interest. And they have concealed our natural law courts. These tyrants have infiltrated our government from the very inception of our nation and have labored continually deteriorating our union, taking the control at every level of government. They have changed our federal cities, built upon righteousness and governed by our creator's law, which is natural law, into a corporate state of greed and corruption controlled by foreign bankers and bar attorneys. They have brought us to the very brink of war. These tyrants have ignored and expunged the people's six directives. Instead of forming a perfect union, they have given our federal cities, post offices, coining of money, and writing unlawful laws to foreign bankers and bar attorneys. Instead of establishing justice, they have concealed our courts of natural law, turned our courts to jurisdictions unknown, abolished habeas corpus, changed our unalienable right to civil rights via the repugnant null and void 14th Amendment by claiming that we are subject to the United States jurisdiction, when in fact we are subject only to natural law. They turned our making over to the bar who has abrogated the law of the land. Instead of ensuring domestic tranquility, they have imposed an income tax that has destroyed the middle class and creating debtors' prisons. Instead of providing for the common defense, they have kept our armed forces in a state of perpetual war against the will of the state, sent our national guard to foreign countries, leaving the states unprotected, abolished an unorganized militia, closed our armories, imposed gun control. Instead of promoting the general welfare, they have regulated commerce. Instead of making commerce regular, they impose unconstitutional sin taxes, prevent the hidden advancements in science, health, and technology. Inventors have been stifled and murdered. Instead of securing the blessings of liberty, they have changed our natural law, constitutional republic, first into a democracy and then into an oligarchy. Our servants are taking money from special interest groups. These are bribes, thereby selling their vote and their soul to the highest bidders, usually on legislation that they don't even have the constitutional authority to pass in the first place, and passing the will of the corporate world above the will of we the people. Acts of our servants are not to provide for special interest groups, not to divide us, not to establish statutory courts in jurisdictions unknown, not to establish laws that enslave the human spirit, not to keep us in perpetual war, not to demoralize us, not to destroy our prosperity, not to put us into harm's way, not to rob us of the proper education, and not to lead us as lambs to the slaughter. The covenant made between God and his people in 1776 empowered we the people to self-government. George Washington said the United States was built upon the fundamental maxims of true liberty, and that the basis of our political system is the right of the people to make and to alter their constitutions of government. But the Constitution, which at any time exists till changed by an explicit and authentic act of the whole people, is sacredly obligatory upon all. The very idea of the power and the right of the people to establish government presupposes the duty of every individual to obey the established government. By God were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible. Whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist, and through his natural law we the people are vested with the unalienable right of governments. Rights of governments are not. Our government servant powers and authorities is defined in the Constitution that we the people ordained and established. Thus, the purpose of this book is to convey to the people that only the people can save America, being powered through the education, and thereby being cognizant that we the people did not consent to any legislative powers that legislate our behavior or penalize wrongdoers. Common law decrees that in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. And it is we, the people, through an untainted grand jury, who are to decide if there is evidence to indict. It is we, the people, through an untainted trial jury, who are to decide both law and the facts. It is we, the people, through an untainted trial jury, who are to decide guilt or innocence. It is we, the people, through an untainted trial jury, who are to decide the restitution or penalty. Common law decrees that for every injury, there must be a remedy. Restitution is the remedy that has the power to restore both victim and wrongdoer. Governments are to be cognizant that we, the people, have been providentially provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of persons. We, the people, have been entrusted to dispense justice through juries formed by we, the people, ourselves. We need not our servant government's permission. Does the master seek leave from his servant? Let us remind our servants that the first known recorded grand jury that was formed by the people themselves to put the tyrant king back under the control of the law was written by we, the people, who wrote their intentions and commands down on paper entitled the Magna Carta. To be cognizant that we, the people, have the unbridled right by law and in law to empaddle their own grand juries and present true bills of information, indictments, and presentments to a court of justice, which is then required to commence a criminal proceeding under natural law. Our founding fathers, with foresight, grafted into the common law Fifth Amendment a buffer that we, the people, may rely upon for justice when public officials, including judges, go rogue, act in bad behavior, and criminally violate the law. To be cognizant that the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts, over whose functioning the courts do not preside. The grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institution of government, institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or referee between the government and the people. The grand jury's functions, independence from the judicial branch, is evident both in the scope and of the power to investigate criminal wrongdoing and in the manner in which that power is exercised. Unlike a court whose jurisdiction is predicted upon a specific case or controversy, the grand jury can investigate merely on suspicion that the law is being violated, or even because it wants assurance that it is not. To be cognizant that bar-controlled federal and state court judges, by their presumed authority, contrary to their oath and duty, fraudulently claim the Constitution for the United States and its Bill of Rights is abolished by statute written by traitorous bar members and passed by traitorous legislators, which are acts of conspiracy, treason, and war against the United States of America, and thereby we, the people. To be cognizant that the United States Supreme Court confirmed unconstitutional legislation null and void. To be cognizant that because rights are unalienable, legislators cannot legislate rights away, no matter what the bar has instructed. Rights come from God and not man. Therefore, not even we, the people, can give them up for ourselves or others. Once we, the people, ordained common law as the law of the land, no man can abrogate it. To claim to do so is an act of war against the people and their God. To be cognizant that unconstitutional acts are not law, and no one is bound to obey them. Judges are expected to maintain a high standard of judicial performance, and when they violate the Constitution, they cease to represent the government because liable for damages and loss any immunity they may have had. State judges, as well as federal, have had the responsibility to respect and protect the persons from violations of federal constitutional rights. To be cognizant that, the United States Supreme Court said, decency, security, and liberty alike demands that government officials be subjected to the same rules of conduct that are commands to the citizens. In governments of laws, existence of the government will be imperiled if it fails to observe the law scrupulously. Crime is contagious. If government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for the law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. And against that pernicious doctrine, this court should resolutely set its face. Judges have no more right to decline the exercise of jurisdiction which is given them to usurp that which is not given. The one or the other would be treason to the Constitution. No judicial process, whatever form it may assume, can have any lawful authority outside of the limits of the jurisdiction of the court or judge by whom it is issued. Any attempt to enforce it beyond these boundaries is nothing less than lawless violence. To be cognizant that, the first recorded grand jury in 1215 AD declared, if anyone has been dispossessed within their legal judgment of his peers, from his lands, his homes, his franchises, or from his rights, we will immediately restore them to him. And if a dispute arises over this, then it will be decided by the 25 jurors of whom it mentioned is made below in the clause for security and peace. Moreover, for all those possessions from which any one has, without the lawful judgment of his peers, been diseased or removed by our government, we will immediately grant full justice therein. To be cognizant that natural law is written in the hearts of men. It's a process of maxims and common sense, and is very easy to see and grasp by the common person. Whereas bar attorneys who are trained in civil law, founded upon Babylonian law, use statutes to construct statutory prisons to control the masses via fines and incarceration, which have no part in common law. Benjamin Franklin, after voting on the Constitution, was asked, "What kind of government do we have?" "A republic, if you can keep it," he replied. That statement by Franklin covers an array of concepts, chief among them morality, social maturity, and a desire to self-educate ourselves and our posterity in natural law, also known as the common law, without which we will remain slaves to the tyrants, who will relentlessly seek power and control over others. To be cognizant of that, the experience of the common people who look into these things will find rest in natural law and perceive these things to be self-evident. But taught lawyers, with very few exceptions, have been taught the art of hypocrisy and speaking lies. They have had their conscience seared, as it were, with a hot iron, and thereby are unable to see these things. After all, they invested years and time and much money to receive the lie that they think is the truth, with the juris doctrinate to prove it, as they hold in disdain anyone self-taught who dares to challenge their web of deceit. To be cognizant that, the Lord warned us that lawyers reject the counsel of God, and that they place upon men burdens grievous to be endured while they place themselves above the burdens, by controlling our courts while they are never held accountable even to their own laws. The Lord went on to say that they will take away the key of knowledge, thereby preventing many from entering into the kingdom of truth. The only solution is to educate ourselves and our children in natural law. This will cultivate within the people a moral compass and nurture the social maturity necessary to develop and sustain a true people's republic. George Washington called the American political ideal the great experiment. Contemporary English historian Paul Johnson writes, "The creation of the United States is the greatest of all human adventures." And Thomas Jefferson warned us that an enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic, and that self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. For the great experiment to be successful, the whole mass of people must be educated and informed. The preservation of our liberty depends upon this. Only we, the people, can correct the abuses of constitutional powers. The ultimate powers of the society must rest upon the people themselves. Our founding fathers did not leave their posterity without the ability to self-government via our consent, and this is what this book will endeavor to accomplish by revealing what has been hidden in plain sight. It starts with an understanding of law and equity and the differences between them, with natural law and positive law and the differences between them, and natural rights and civil rights and the differences between them, with a republic and a democracy and the differences between them. The Declaration of Independence. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. We, the people, ordained and established the law that governed our servants via the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution for the United States of America, and the Bill of Rights. This book will instruct the people how to consent to the actions of our servant government by chaining them down with the chains of the Constitution, by controlling and participating in the following judicial and political processes. The grand jury. We, the people, must administrate and orientate the grand jury and not the prosecutors who will deny the people's access to the grand jury and stack the grand jury in his favor using statutes to get his indictments. The grand jury must understand two things. First, in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. And second, the grand jury can nullify any statute, because we, the people, never gave our legislators the authority to legislate our behavior or dictate punishments for wrongdoers or define a crime. Furthermore, if Congress does not discipline their peers and the officers they approve, the grand jury can indict them if they violate their oath, thereby removing them from office. Why are we ignorant of the facts that we, the people, through the grand jury, have the ability to indict any elected servant, thereby removing them from office, if they refuse to honor their oaths? The answer is because we are ignorant to our founding documents and its common law. The petit jury. The trial jury has the power to nullify statutes, and if a judge tries to interpret the law, that would be jury tampering. The petit jury decides both the facts and the law. They also decide the punishment and an eye towards restitution, using the biblical principle that if a man steals an ox or a sheep, he is to restore four or five. We, the people, consent to the innocence or the guilt of the accused. In all criminal cases, no judge can judge one of the people. Only the people, through an untainted petit jury, can judge the people. So why are there so many people serving jail sentences without ever being tried by a jury? The answer is because we are ignorant to our founding documents and its common law. The committeemen. We need to restore the elected committeemen, whereas committeemen at the grassroots level decide who gets on the ballot and not the party bosses. Committeemen can require candidates to take a course on the Constitution and civics before putting them in on the ballot. Committeemen can recall any elected official from office for not honoring their oaths, or if they refuse to speak when they have a duty to answer. Only we, the people, can nominate candidates for public office through the committeeman process. So why are there so many unconstitutionally ignorant people and criminals elected to office without ever being nominated by we, the people? The answer is because we are ignorant of the founding documents and the common law. The militia, being we the people themselves, are separate from the states and the federal governments, over whose functioning the states and the federal governments do not control. And in whatever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish. When communications between the people and their servants completely break down, the militia is the enforcement arm of we the people to bring them back under the chains of the Constitution. Without the militia, liberty will be lost. George Mason's speech in the Virginia ratifying convention in 1788, he said, "When the resolutions of enslaving America was formed in Great Britain, The British Parliament was advised by an artful man who was governor of Pennsylvania to disarm the people, that it was the best and most effectual way to enslave them, but that they should not do it openly, but weaken them and let them sink gradually by totally disusing and neglecting the militia, which is exactly where we find ourselves today. Why? The answer is because we are ignorant to our founding documents and the common law. The ballot box to vote, education, knowledge is power. No one understand our founding documents. No one understand common law and where it comes from. No one understand the history of common law. No one understand our founding fathers. No one understand American history. No one understand the court system. No one understand our legislative powers. We the people never consented to the licensing of our rights and the controlling of our behavior through legislation. So why have our servants, legislators, written thousands of statutes controlling us as if we were the servants, their servants? The answer is because we are ignorant to our founding documents and the common law. Why is it that our elected servants receive bribes from special interest groups to do the will, to do their will, and not the will of we, the people, who elected them? The answer is because we are ignorant to our founding documents and the common law. Whereas any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter and to abolish it. Declaration of Independence. Why do we have government that suppresses and terrorizes the people? The answer is because we are ignorant to our founding documents and the common law. We believe that a study of the contents of this book will be the lasting value to all who have serious concerns in the on the direction of this nation, and that the exercising of the principles within this book can return America back to its roots again. Liberty restored. There are three issues that our servant government has deceitfully expunged from our American education, which are the very principles of liberty. Number one, ethics, biblical principles and practice, God. Number two, justice, judicial principles and process, common law. And number three, political science, political principles and process, rule by consent of the people. By nature, people fear and feel overwhelmed by what they do not understand. The orchestrators of America's 20th century exploited this human flaw by eliminating these doctrines from our education and used entertainment and the media to advance this fear to the point of total avoidance. The goal of this age-old ruse is keep the slaves ignorant so that they are powerless to act in any constructive way and rebel against their masters. People simply do not discuss these taboos in any serious way for fear of revealing their ignorance and may be forced to face the fact that they know nothing worthwhile knowing at all, while being deluded into believing they are smarter than the people before them. If it wasn't so sad, it would be comical. Once the foundation of America thought that defines liberty, these three American principles are shied away from. By design, people are ignorant of them, and when confronted, they have been programmed to engage a clergyman, hire a lawyer, or join a party so that they can be told how to pray, plead, and vote. Occasionally, people have a moment of clarity and come face to face with the decision of illusion or reality. And in a moment of composure, we sometimes break through the psychological barrier of fiction and set course on the journey for truth. The principles of liberty are threefold. Remove one and you lose liberty. The light, which is God, Jesus Christ. Two, justice, the judicial process under common law, natural law. Three, sovereignty, the political process. Light maximizes Maxims of law avows that justice and virtue are synonymous. Before a man can implement justice, he must first possess virtue. The Bible declares virtue flows from the Lord alone and defines virtue as whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, and of good report. Without virtue, man cannot rule his destiny, and without God, man cannot achieve justice. These three are interconnected, and man's rule of destiny is not possible without the other two. Justice is the constant and perpetual disposition to render every man his due. In the most extensive sense of the word, it differs little from virtue, for it includes within itself the whole circle of virtues. Yet the common distinction between them is that which considered positively and in itself is called virtue, when considered relatively and with respect to others, has the name of justice. But justice, being in itself a part of virtue, is confined to things simply good or evil, and consists in a man's taking such a proportion of them as he ought. And the whole multitude sought to touch him, Jesus Christ, for there went virtue out of him, and he healed them all. Sovereignty, the very meaning of sovereignty, is that the degree of sovereign makes the law. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to the law, for it is the author and the source of the law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law is defined as the definition and limitation of power. It's the Constitution. The people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. Thomas Jefferson understood these principles when he said, "God, who gave us life, gave us liberty. And can liberties of the nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are a gift of God, that they are not to be violated with his wrath? Indeed, I tremble for my countrymen when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever." George Washington understood these principles when he said, "The favorable smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right which heaven itself has ordained." Benjamin Franklin understood these principles when he said, "Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters." John Adams understood these principles when he said, "A constitution was made only for a morally minded and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." Patrick Henry understood these principles when he said, "It cannot be emphasized too strongly or too often that this great nation was founded not by religionists but by Christians, not on religions but on the gospel of Jesus Christ. For this very reason, people of other faiths have been afforded asylum, prosperity, and freedom of worship here." James Madison understood these principles when he said, "We have staked the whole future of American civilization not upon the powers of government, far from it. We have staked the future of all our political institutions upon the capacity of mankind for self-government, upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, to sustain ourselves, according to the Ten Commandments of God." Noah Webster, father of the American scholarship and education, understood these principles when he said, "No truth is more evident into my mind than that of the Christian religion, which must be the basis of any government intended to secure the rights and privileges of a free people. And so, as it was in their day, so it is today." George Washington said, and it's no different today, "The fate of unborn millions will now depend, under God, on the courage of this army, we the people. Our cruel and unrelenting enemy leaves us only the choice of brave resistance or the most abject submission. We are therefore to resolve to conquer or die. And James Madison, no different than yesterday as today, it is the duty of every man to render to the Creator such homage before any man can be considered as a member of civil society, we must be considered as a subject of the governor of the universe. Okay, this brings us to the end of the introduction to the government by consent. I surely hope people consider getting this book and learning how to government by consent and spread the word and learn all of the different things that are taught in that book. You can find a link to purchase the book down on the bottom of this video. Okay, hopefully we'll get some conversation on these issues because this is the important thing that we need to be doing, really focusing in on saving this nation, getting the knowledge, understanding the common law, understanding being enlightened by our Constitution, making sure the people that we have elected and placed into office know the Constitution and obey it. Only the people can save America. Again, Donald Trump and his administration is doing an excellent job, and he will return everything back to the people. But once he gives it to the people, unfortunately, the people don't know what to do with it. I speak to myself first. I was ignorant as anyone else until I started to do this research. You know, things over the years, little by little, I was led eventually to this point. What is government by consent? Who are we as a people? How did we become we the people? And we realize who our founding fathers were. We had to learn that. And we need to know common law. And common law is simply common sense with an eye on justice. It gets no more difficult than that. So, matter of fact, common law is empowering. The more and more you learn about the natural law, about the things that God has given us, the gifts of liberty, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, which is the foundation of our law, a covenant with God, the Bill of Rights, which lists out our basic liberties, and so all these things are empowering. They're not boring, they're empowering. It's not reading through laws line after line of statute and regulations and more statutes and so on and so forth, which just bore you to tears. This is powerful. This is enlightening. This is empowering. All right, anyway, let's take some questions. Let's see, the first person in there looks like Linda from Virginia. You got the mic, go right ahead.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. Well, I just have some questions on the notice and demand.
I saw Jan mentioned earlier that I guess you sent a copy of what you put together.
Right.
Go ahead.
That was just for reference. So the notice and demand is directed towards the perpetrators, but it also has to be directed to the courts?
No, directly to the persons involved, and you have to get them all involved. You can't bring some in and not the others. If you're going to deal with a problem that connects to other people, they all have to be brought in. Otherwise, you don't get anywhere.
I listed all four of them. The dilemma comes in when you serve them by the sheriff. The in-state it's $12, but the out-of-state is like $75 a piece.
Well, you don't have to have the sheriff, your sheriff, serve the out-of-state. The people in the out-of-state can be served by their sheriff in their county. You just got to look it up, get the address on where to send the papers to and how much the fee is, and send them a check with your papers to make the service and with a returned envelope in there.
Oh, that's a good idea. I didn't think about that. Okay.
Yeah, so that's pretty simple. But that's a good deal. $12. That's very good.
Let me ask. Yeah, I can't believe that. I just wonder if that's really right. But anyway,
They shouldn't be charging much anyway. Usually, you know, I know in my neighborhood here it's like about $35. So, but
right, that sounds more like it, I guess. But there's a paragraph in here that says duty, and it has a footnote there that says for IRS. Is that whole thing for IRS only, or?
Well, I'm looking for it right now. You took the notice and demand out of here. Let me see if
right.
I can
absolutely.
A copy. Would you use the Word or the PDF?
Well, I have both, so.
Okay. All right, well, I'll open up the notice and demand on the Word. And what line are you talking about?
The part that says duty. I think it's page 3. At least that's what I printed.
Right here, as agents for a government. Is that it?
Yes.
Or first down?
Well, I took out the agents for government, but then the rest of it doesn't sound like maybe it would apply either. So
okay, well, here's the basic. I'm just going to reread it with hopefully apply a little logic. So you get to the point where the violation of right and your own estimate. What is the question? Is what is he or she doing or not doing? That's question number one.
Yeah, yeah. I already did that.
Number two, your injuries, example, loss of substantive right, if that's involved, injury and damages are not synonymous words, so it's two different things. You have an injury and you have damages. Injury is the harm done. Damages are the compensation for the injury. You need to understand what the two differences are between those two points, is injury.
Yes, I do. I read that.
And make your notices accordingly. Number three, the duty to not cause your injury, that they had a duty, or whatever the case may be, that the moral, public, and private laws that required him or her to not cause the injury, example, Ten Commandments, Bill of Rights, even codes, if the individual is working for the government. And he and she is breaching that duty, whatever that duty is. Remember, when someone has a duty to speak, it's fraud if they remain silent. You know, I scratch my head in Congress because on a few occasions I've seen people come before Congress and they were people with authority, with powers, that were either elected or put into certain positions, and they had a duty to speak, and instead they pleaded the Fifth. Well, they can't plead the Fifth Amendment because they had a duty to speak. The Fifth Amendment pleading is only on something that's personal outside of additional powers and authorities that they were given. Once they were given powers and authorities, they have a duty to speak. But anyway, there are different duties, but key things for agents, people who are government agents, they have a duty to act in a certain way, to not go beyond their powers and authorities.
So if this is a consumer issue, is this where I list the laws, like the federal Truth in Lending and all that, the Virginia laws?
The injuries, going down further, you see the injuries of violating the violation of my unalienable rights. If that was the case, they're not really violating your unalienable rights. State your losses, if there are any losses. Legal and paralegal consulting costs, if any, et cetera, and any other things, of course. Okay, so that's some injuries that looking at. What was the question? Is this what?
Well, the question was about that paragraph about duty, and I just wondered if that was only for IRS or...
Well, no. Duties depend on a lot of things. Even in the market, they have certain duties. Remember, they're under regulations. They're under statutes. That's what equity is for. Equity is legislative law to be applied upon people, involved in interstate, on a federal level anyway, interstate, activities, commercial activities, or they're working for government agencies. But every business out there, it falls under some kind of regulations to some degree, and not necessarily maybe with the federal, but with the state.
So they had a duty not to violate those laws and statutes.
Oh, that's right. Exactly. That's why
and
you need
what
to...
What about color of law? Does that apply here?
Well, color of law is when someone is acting under the color of law and doing a wrongdoing. That's what the color of law is.
So it would apply then? It could apply.
Oh, of course not. You could apply as you look and start to kind of come to an understanding of what their requirements were, what kind of authorities or what kind of business that they were involved in, and the duties that they owed you as someone who is purchasing or buying those things. Again, you got to think this out logically. And when you finish this, you need to read it over again very carefully. Maybe change some wording, change some paragraphs, and when you're done with that, you set it aside and you come back and you read it again and again and again. 10 times is my rule of thumb, okay? And even when you read through something 10 times and go through it very carefully, after you send it out and as time goes on, you say, oh, man, I should have said this, or maybe I shouldn't have said it that way, maybe I should have said it this way. But the more time you spend with perfecting your paperwork, then the better it's going to be.
Well, I understand that, but you can take a look at the last agreement that they sent me. So it's sort of a time pressure to get this out to them, you know, because they're wanting me to sign agreements that forfeit my forfeit non-disclosure and hold harmless.
Well,
agreement.
Don't forget, you got to finish this off. There is the restitution. All of the above-named persons and cohorts to be discovered are responsible to restore the damages, blah, 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 blah. And maybe
right.
you're going to use some codes, maybe you're not, depending on how the codes apply, and what your expectations are of them, you know, what the damages are. And then you got to get to the main part, the legal part. Therefore, I, your, and put your name there, demand that you, in good faith, do your duty by correcting your files or whatever it is that has to be done. Send me a certified mail, your letter of corrections within 60 days. 30 days, most people, but 60 days on the federal. Return money stolen from me with interest, whatever the case may be, because some of this doesn't apply. You have to use your logic on what applies, and you maybe add some things in here. But here's the key point at the end. If you do not do as demanded within the allotted time, then by tactic proclamation, I will determine for you the facts, your duties, and the damages that you owe to me. If you do not perform as demanded, I will take lawful action in personam or in rem to defend against you the persons in concert with you who cause to or attempt to cause said injuries, to secure my substantive rights. I mean, if that belongs there, fine. And to redeem the damage owed to me. If you fail to satisfy this demand, the demand within the allotted time, after having been duly served with this notice and demand, then by tactic proclamation, put your name, or my nominee or my assignee will determine it for you the following, that the aforesaid demand is just, that the court of record in your state may enforce the demand either ex parte or con parte, that you and you or your... Let me scroll this up. That you and each of you concur and are satisfied with the justness of the demand and the process by which the demand shall be enforced.
In other words, they've been given an opportunity and did nothing.
They're going to ignore this most likely, and now they've defaulted.
Because, you know, there's some other, like I said, this originated in the solar industry, and a lot of people said they did notice and demands, but they didn't respond. And I was thinking, well, they don't understand what a notice and demand is.
Well,
right?
There's numerous things. Okay, number one, did they do it correctly? Number two, did they get all the points in? Were they very clear? Did they get all the individuals involved? Did they hit every point and every duty and lay out perfectly exactly what their duties were and what expectations are, okay, and what and if they broke the laws, whatever they may have been, the statute that controls them is a law broken, okay? So those are all very important things, number one. Number two, you have to understand how this thing was put together. When they fail to respond, it now has become a default. If you go into court Okay, and that's why you put notice and demand right in big letters on the top. Verified notice and demand, okay?
Right,
if you come to court and you serve an individual a summons, and they have 30 days, and you're on the front page, it tells them that they are summons, that they have to answer to this thing within 30 days, they have to file their answer, blah, 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 blah. It's a very standard paragraph on the front page, which is the summons. Then you have the paper that sets forth the process, the whole problem, you know, what happened, which is all this kind of information, which is the plaintiff bringing in the paperwork to make the claim. And then once it's served on those individuals, properly served, and they fail to respond in 30 days, okay, all this has to be documented. That's why you have to serve it correctly. And it's the same thing as filing. There's no difference in filing a paper in the court, okay? And when they fail to respond, you file for a default. So I would go right in.
Is that a summary judgment?
Let me think. You can call it a summary judgment. Yes, it would be called a summary judgment because they have to make you're asking the judge to make the decision.
So basically, I can go, if they don't respond, I can ask for summary judgment.
Well, exactly. You do a default. You take it right into the court, and instead of filing a notice and demand in the way that you normally do it, and a summons instead of filing a summons the way you would normally do it, you'd bring this paperwork in to file for a default because you've already served them, and what their expectations, what the damages that you incurred, and what they did to violate the law, and what their duties were, and you'd put it all down. It's already done, okay? Now, the thing is lawyers, first of all, they don't know about these things, because this is a common law procedure, notice and demands. They have no clue. I've talked with a few lawyers on this. They don't even know what I'm talking
about. Well, I think they know about it, because I've tried to post it, and they don't want it posted. They know of it anyway.
Well, what they do is they're telling you, hey, that's dumb. Take a hike, buddy. You know, they try to ignore it, make it have no power. You just move on. Justice.
They're trying to get clients. That's what it is. Basically, they're trying to victimize these people a second time. You know.
Right. Well, look at I'll. I don't know. Hopefully what we just went through is suffice. I mean, you got to think this out, take your time, and work through it, you know, very carefully, and make sure you don't leave anything out. And then you go through the filing in the courts as if you're going right in for a default judgment. And they're going to argue the point, you know, and so on and so forth. The courts, if we're truly under common law, the courts would accept this and move on, and the default would be set forward, and you'd get your papers to the sheriff, and the sheriff would go and make the collections, and that would be that. But because we're in the situation we're in, you don't know how the courts are going to react to this. If it's a status quo situation, they're not going to act on your behalf, on your end. Because you're going into court and you're coming in your own person, in personam, and the other side has a lawyer, well, they tend to, you know, be buddies with the lawyer. That's problematic, too. Then you can go after them, potentially, for due process, maybe. I'd have to think that out. But anyway...
Let me ask one last thing. Now, this is a notice and demand. It's not like I'm presenting the case, right? So how detailed do I have to be about, like, I've got the Federal Consumer Financial Protection Act, 12 U.S.C., you know, the Truth in Lending Act, Regulation Z,
I would take all those things and put it into an affidavit. And keep it, you know, short and sweet. Less is more. Remember that. In law...
What do you mean put in an affidavit?
Well, you create the affidavit that you've complained to these individuals, you violated this, or whatever it is that you had done and that they didn't respond to, you can put that into an affidavit, and you could attach that affidavit to the papers and make reference to that affidavit of some of the wrongdoings they did and their lack of...
My question is, how detailed do I have to have this down to the exact, you know, section and verse or whatever?
Well, if you're talking about law and that applies to them, you have to be very detailed on that law, where it's at, what their responsibilities were, and where they failed. Yes. You see, it does get complex when you get into.
That's going to take a lot of time.
Well, that's, let me tell you, that's what's involved in writing papers. Look, it does get a little involving when you're dealing with equity, because you're dealing with people in commercial activities, or in some people dealing with people that are government agents. So then, therefore, statutes and regulations apply to them, and they have to be obedient to them. And when they break them, then you've been injured by them, because they were made for the purpose to prevent the injury, and yet
Actually, there's seven states, their AGs have filed suits against these people for this. And so there's a lot of cases that are going to...
Well, again, you know, you want to gather all that information together. You might want to put it into an affidavit, but remember, short and sweet, don't get too long, stay on point, don't get long-winded, don't tell long stories, you know, just the facts. Nothing more than the facts. And remember, all this stuff, if worst case comes to worse and you end up into court and the judge doesn't acknowledge or that you've put in, your notice and demand, one of the things I would do is appeal it immediately. But nevertheless, the case could still go on. And when the case goes on, then you want to lay out all your necessary information in that court.
Yeah. Maybe if you get a chance to look at
I could look at what you have, okay, but I don't know what would be missing, because that requires research. You see, you have a very specific thing going, very specific individuals in the commercial realm, and I don't know what all those things are that are necessary, what you might miss, because you're the one doing the research on this. But whatever you can put in there, give your thoughts on what you have in there.
You can look at the agreement they sent me, and you can see where there are. They have no leverage with everything
they did. It's not important for me to see that, because you seem to realize, and it does sound from all the conversation we have, that they have violated you, and that they didn't. They didn't really have any real agreement with you. There's no.
They have no leverage to ask me to forfeit to make a harmless agreement.
There is no contract. Why is there no contract? There's no contract because there was no meeting of the minds. That's the key. Without a meeting of the mind, no contract exists.
They never provided me a contract.
Well, there you go.
I
know. I don't want to go back and forth with that, because we discussed that. But the thing, because we got three people in the queue, and I want to get to them tonight. And
contract was breached to begin with. I haven't seen it, but I really suspected it was a breach contract to start with.
Well, it sounds like there never was a contract. They just came in and did what they want to do. There was no, I already told you before, I've been in this business for a long, I was a contractor for over 45 years, and for a long time I've done construction management, architectural work, you know, heavy construction, light construction, home construction. I've done repair, you know, home improvements. I've done it all. The point is this, I have never, ever, in the years of my experience, ever got money from a lending institution that didn't come in a two-party check. And it usually goes to the person who set forth the process. Usually it should be the client, the person who is really signing and making the loan. It should come to that person, and it's two parties.
I think it's different now, because...
Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. It's a two-party check all the time. That will never change. If they got it, it's still a two-party check. That means they committed fraud. You need to go to that institution, and you have to do discovery on that and say, hey, where is a copy of the check that you claim you gave to me? Because I'd like to see it. My signature isn't anywhere. Where is it? And then they may produce a check, and whoa, there's your signature, and you didn't sign it. Now someone's going to jail, aren't they?
Oh, I know. I know they copied my signature to all the documents.
All right, I got to go, though. Because we spent a lot of time on your case.
Okay, all right.
We'll talk again in the future once you put things together.
Yeah, right? Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to go to our next caller. It's we don't have a name or a number, but it is anonymous. You should hear that your mic has been open. What's your first name and your state?
Yeah, hi. Good evening. This is Elizabeth. I'm in Arizona. Can you hear me all right?
We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. I just had a question, but just after hearing this, so what is the difference between the letter of demand and an affidavit? Because you're, both of them are, you're putting down definitive statements, right?
Yeah, and, but a notice of demand takes it to the point that if you don't respond, then I'm going to respond for you. I'm going to make the decisions for you, and this is the decisions I'm going to make, and I'm going to execute this through a court of law. I mean,
okay,
that's the difference. That's what a notice and demand basically entails, whereas the affidavit is in support of a case.
Okay. Is it better to send an affidavit first and then have them default? Because they probably will, right? I mean, they usually...
Well, the affidavit doesn't set forth the process, so it doesn't really do anything. You could attach an affidavit to the papers, you know, and refer to that affidavit and say this is the affidavit of facts and which lays forth the damages and
okay,
the things that you didn't do or whatever. You know, you have to think about the words on that. And you work... Look at... If there's anything I've learned, I sometimes will write things in very odd language, you know, and I'm not sure what to write. I just, anything that's going to make me remember what I want, like a placement, a place to hold a place in the paper, you know, you get to certain points. And I usually highlight that with red font, so I make sure I get back to that. And that it jumps out at me when I read through it. And then later on, you say, okay, this is what I got to write there in this place. You know, sometimes you're not sure of the wording, but just whatever words you can come up with is good for the moment, you know, red fonted. And as you work and massage this thing, it becomes more and more perfected until you get to the point that you feel comfortable and file whatever it is you're filing.
Okay.
That's true with any legal paper.
Yeah, okay.
Remember, law is constructive. It's one thing on top of another on top of another. It's like studying the Bible, line upon line, precept upon precept, point on point on point.
So, you know, in my life, I make errors usually when I first do things. But
we
I,
all do. Hey, look at, you know, I just read.
Like when I learned how to rollerblade, the first thing they did was teach me how to fall.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Once I learn how to fall, I'm not going to be worried about it, you know, yeah. So... I have to be willing to do it imperfectly and just do it.
Right. And life will teach us to fall many times before we get to a certain point anyway. Look, at, I just read through a preface of my book, okay, Government by Consent. And in that preface, I saw two errors. And it's not going to be the only ones in that book because no one is perfect. You know, I'm not perfect. I'll have error. And sometimes, you know, it's not that you you could have an error that's just an error. My two errors that I saw were errors of lack of a knowledge of a certain thing that I would have written the two lines that I'm thinking about in that paper I just read. I would have written them differently, okay, and would have been from a different perspective, okay. One of the things was on the 14th Amendment. I have a totally new perspective, a different perspective on the 14th Amendment than I did have before when I wrote the book, okay. They're not major mistakes. But they are errors, and there's only one person I know that doesn't error, and that's Jesus Christ. So.
Right, and I'm just thinking that the other side would find an error and then hold that against me and get distracted off onto that. You know.
Well, again, you can always make corrections, stand corrected. You know,
yeah,
and you can even go, hey, look, correction is grievous to those who have forsaken the way, and I made an error here, and I'm willing to accept my error. Let me restate that. And do it in a sworn statement, you know, even if it's only a paragraph on a piece of paper with the necessary headings and a signature on the bottom that's notarized, and it's verified, you know, paper.
Okay, thank you. The reason I got on was I'm kind of stuck, and I was wondering if, like, I left a message for Jan to just see if I'm even willing to pay for the time, you know. I mean, I need a little bit of, not to take a lot of time, but, you know, it takes time. But just for some clarification, because it's like I didn't sign up to do this course because I thought, well, I'm going to study common law. I signed up in it because I don't have any, I'm trying to save my life a little bit, you know, and I'm kind of stuck. And so,
well, look at that. Let me, you know, this is true with everything. Okay. You know, again, when you're into something new, this is common law, particularly is what we want to focus in, natural law. This is what government by consent is all about, natural law. Courts are all about natural law. So you got to keep that in mind. It's all about natural law. Natural law is simply common sense. It's the applications of statements that cannot be denied. Okay,
right.
Self-evident.
I do understand. I'm saying, I don't mean to go on, but I'm just saying.
I want to get to a point, okay? When you go through the course, mm-hmm. There may be things that you don't understand, okay? And you kind of just red letter them, so to speak. You make a note of them, the location, where it's at, and so on and so forth. And when you get through the whole course, and you go back and look at, let me tell you, when I went to learn law, I learned it off a lawyer who sold Juris Dictionary, I think it was called. And it cost me $350 for that course. And it's nowhere near, in my opinion, what we teach, okay? Nowhere near it. But nevertheless, it was all foreign to me. It was all new hat. I didn't understand a lot of it. You know, trying to put it all together, it's juggled in your mind. And so I just went through the course. I literally did that course over the weekend, 3 days. I started on a Friday evening, and I finished up on a Sunday evening. And I just stuck with it going through it. I went through the course numerous times, and I was highlighting areas that I didn't understand. But even after that weekend, there was still a lot of, you know, darkness. There was a lot of voids, a lot of unsureties. And then you start doing your own research and pulling things together and studying. And I've already done all of that. Okay, in this course, I pulled a lot of stuff together to bring it together. So it's a matter of going through it. It's like, I don't want to say it's like reading the Bible, but to some degree, everything is like reading the Bible. The Bible is a very difficult book to read through. Okay, and if God wanted to make it easy and simple, he would have done it, but he didn't. He made it difficult for a purpose. Okay, so it's very difficult to go through. And I remember reading through the book of Genesis, for instance. Boy, most of what they were talking about, I was totally lost. Then we got into Deuteronomy. Forget about it, you know. I jumped over into the Gospels. And a lot of the parables, I didn't get a lot of the parables, didn't understand. But if anything I learned is you understand and you glean whatever you can and you move on. And then you come back, if you're really serious, really, because this is how you get embedded into your brain anyway, but coming back over and over and over, especially the areas where you don't understand. And what you find is when you get past a certain point and you come back and relook at it, and then you get to the point you didn't understand, I understand now. Why? Because there was prerequisitional requirements to understand certain things that you didn't have yet. And that's okay. So you got to do it over, you know, again, to take the course, to become familiar, which is what most people might do. They're not really intended necessarily to go into courts, or maybe they are. If they're intended to go into courts, you better do it over and over again, numerous times. It's like going to college. It's not go through it, zip one time, and you're done. No, you got to go back and review and study. And your studying is just reviewing and going back through the whole process over and over again. And that's why I put it on MP3 and MP4. MP4 is the first time. You got to go MP4 first time, get the video. MP3s, you already saw the videos. You can be playing it in your car when you're doing some meaningless work somewhere. You got a headset on and listening to it. And that's how I studied law, over and over and over and over and over again, just listening, you know?
Right. I've heard you talk about that a number of times, and that's what I do.
Yeah.
I'm on a public line here, and it goes up on YouTube, which is owned by the deep state, you know? So I'm really
kind of... They're done.
Huh? What's that?
You don't have to worry about them anymore. They're done.
I know, but...
are little things that we're peons to these people. They got so many problems. They don't have time to come out after us at this point in time.
Well, they probably don't take us seriously anyway. So, but I'm just... I don't know. Maybe maybe it's asking too much. I got to the pleadings, and it started talking about evidence, and I had to go lay down because I've got so much stuff that's just affecting me, and I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to make it. But then I just thought I'd just kind of gloss through that. I mean, I've got like one company that lost a bunch of my emails. Now I know that, well, I believe that I can, you know, just I can subpoena them for all their emails. But
well,
it's
they
just
they may delete them and say they didn't have them.
I beg your pardon?
They may delete them and say they didn't have them, but who knows
well,
what they.
Well, yeah, I have no idea, but my sent files were gone.
Well,
so,
let me just make a point here, and this is more beneficial to other people than to you at this point in time. But okay. This is exactly why everyone, look at, every child coming out of 12th grade should have already known everything we teach here. They should know everything we teach in government by consent. They should know everything we teach in court access in the common law. They should understand everything we teach about our founding documents and what common law is. Every child should know this by the time they come out of 12th grade. And so we haven't been taught that. And so people who don't have a problem right now and they think they don't have to know it, well, number one, you can't be a good citizen. There's nothing wrong with being a citizen. I know people say there is. It's a problem. No. Constitution used the word citizen 7 times. And we are citizens of the United States. I am a citizen of the United States. And being a citizen of the United States makes me a citizen in any state I go into. Plant my feet on the ground of Jersey, I'm a citizen there, have all the rights, can do whatever I want there with the courts. And it doesn't matter, you see. But it's important to realize that we should know these things so that we can have government by consent. Know these things that when the time comes up and they try to assault us with some BS or someone does a wrongdoing to us that we have to do something about, that we know how to go into the courts, deal with the courts, file the papers, and take care of our business instead of making some lawyer a millionaire. Because that's all they're interested in is the money. I'm so sick and tired of them people. I remember talking with my lawyer, and he was constantly on the phone, Mr. Big Shot, kicking back on the chair, talking to other people as he's talking to me, you know?
Right.
He's dealing with other people's cases.
I've had that,
it's
too.
It's all about freaking money. I'm tired of it. These people make me sick to my stomach.
Yeah, I had to get my money back. So, yeah, okay, well, so I don't know. Maybe I'm just out of line here, but I'll just kind of move. I'll move past. I'll go through the pleadings, but I can't. I don't know.
Gleam what you can. Look, when you get frustrated and hung up on something, you're not doing yourself any good.
You've got
a dictionary, okay, and you look up things in a dictionary and you understand the words and you this, that, and the other thing, but you still don't understand it. Like I said, redline it. Move on, okay?
Yeah, okay?
Because when you come back, then you may get the prerequisitional requirements to understand that, and then you say, oh, there it is, now I understand it, you know?
Well, you know, like, sometimes I just want to know, like, the remedy, more the remedy at the point before I have the courage to go into this, because it's vile. And, you know, I'm learning words like I downloaded, you know, out of Black's Law, fiduciary. You know, now that's a Roman term, right? But it's a term that's, I can use that, right? They have every single party. Fiduciary. They had a fiduciary duty to help me and protect me, take care of me. And
well, you have to understand the meaning fiduciary and then see the application of it that applies to whatever you're applying it to, whether they did indeed have a fiduciary.
But it's basically that they have a duty to do what they were there to do, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they failed me. So,
again, the problem gets back to this, is you've been living life, you've gone to school, you've lived your life, and now you're at a point in time in your life, and you have to deal with the courts, but you never learned anything about it.
That's
a problem. That's a big, big problem, and I try to impress this on everyone. They need to know. Look, your heritage is in the law. Think about this. Your heritage is in the law, and your inheritance is liberty. So if you don't know the law, you don't know your heritage, and you truly don't know all your liberties. And you don't know how to defend them. And you don't know when even some of them are being violated. Okay? And you get a whole new mindset. All right? Because now you walk as the sovereign, as the king. Okay? Understanding and making sure you don't abuse anybody. But you walk as the king.
Yeah. No, I'm just trying to keep going, and I know it's part of a learning curve. I mean, I'm old enough to know that this happens every time you learn something.
It's all new hat. You've been around long enough to know. It's new hat. Look, no one taught us to speak. All of a sudden, we said words, we surprised people. Next thing you know, we're having conversations. We're understanding more and more, you know? You watch, you know, I remember with my children, watch some of these cartoons. I'm trying to think of some of the Rugrats, for instance, okay? You know, it was written on different levels. It was written for the children on the one hand, but there were things in there for the adults. The children don't understand that. They can't comprehend it. They can't relate to it. But it's like anything else. You go through it, and you come back, and all of a sudden you start to see the things you didn't see before.
Okay,
It's new hat. That's all. After a while, you become old hat.
The last thing I want to just say, it looks like I could learn affidavits and the notice of demand. I could learn those, and then I would have something to go, okay, this is part of the remedy, and it's also part of gathering evidence when they don't reply. So then that might be a segue into some of this other evidence that I have, that I've got so many things, and I know that it's too much.
Well, look at again each one of these different points, and you know, different things that you learn from one point to another point to another point to another point. Again, it doesn't matter that you don't understand all the points, because again, you're going to understand some points. And again, I'm getting back to the fact that they may be they are prerequisitional. Okay,
yeah.
Because law. Remember, law is constructive, line upon line, precept upon precept. That's what law is.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, I've got to move on because it's getting late. We've got three people.
Thank you very much for your time. And
talk again.
Thank you, dear.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Okay, Walt, New York, you got it.
Is that for me?
Yep, you got it, Walt. We got two other people, so it's going to be a little short.
I won't hold you up. When I entered into the conference call tonight, it was about 9:35. And the first words I heard you speaking are from that book you're reading there, whatever that book is, I'm not sure.
Right, that was government by consent.
Okay, you were saying 1938 something was happening. You only spoke about that for about a minute, all the bad things that happened in 19. Could you repeat that, because I want to record it? And then,
This will be posted up on YouTube and Rumble. You'll be able to get it right off of our webpage. But also, the actual recording itself, okay, the video, which I had recorded earlier, okay, I'm going to post that also on its own. And when I post that on its own, I will send out an email concerning that repost. So tomorrow I should probably be sending that out, an email telling people that, you know, about what this particular video was about that we did and covered over the Monday night program. But you'll be able to get it from either going and rewatching the video. Let me get out, move real quickly and show you. For instance, if you come to today's issues, open NLA Monday open forum videos. If you click on that, okay, you'll be able to click here to go to the videos, and that'll give you all of the NLA Monday Night videos, okay? And you'll probably find it here as the second one, okay? And I'll also post it as a regular video on its own, introducing the book.
Are you able to pull it up right now? This is that 1 minute worth of message you gave there, starting with the words 1938. Can you repeat that?
I would have to fumble around to get to wherever that point was in there. I don't remember.
Can you do by memory what you said?
Well, 1938 was the Rules Enabling Act, and that's what destroyed our courts.
Mm-hmm. You said something about it took over the laws of God and all that business you were talking about.
Well, absolutely, because it changed our courts. It got rid of common law. They think, you know, the Bible talks about this. At the time will come, they think they have the power to change the laws. Okay, and they're talking about right here, what we're talking about right now. They come in and change the laws. We have a covenant with God, you know. The Declaration of Independence is a covenant with God. We desire to be under His law and thereby to receive His blessings and thereby being obedient. And you notice, you know, you take the morality of people from around the world, unless they got a strong Christian background, their morals aren't so well. You know, look at all of the peoples, the Somalians, for instance. I mean, the Christ is so far from these people. They believe in Baal. Okay, they worship the devil, Baal. Any god outside of the true God is the devil. And their moralities, they have no problem stealing and doing what they're doing. This is how they live life. And there's lots of different countries like that. But there, you know, but a lot of countries are Christian. Now, remember, Germany was Christian, although it's being infiltrated by a lot of people also. But nevertheless, they originally were, they were Christian background. They still have the Christian, you know, in their society. They need to, as Rubio said, you know, you need to get back and get back to who you are as a people. We want a Europe there. We want to be able to visit Germany and see Germany. We don't want to see, you know, the, what do you call that, some, an Eastern religion or anything governing the society of all of Europe, nor do we want in the United States, you know.
Were you elaborating when you started tonight?
Mm-hmm.
I've known this. I might have mentioned it too on one of your shows. It's a Supreme Court case, Erie Railroad versus Tompkins, 1938.
Yep.
That was the end of the Constitution for the United States of America. Last question.
No, it was actually earlier than that, but it really goes back to the 1871 Organic Act, which is really the beginning of the construction of all these laws they constructed upon that.
Yeah, but it came out in a court order. Elaborate.
Well, again, but that was null and void because it's repugnant. It's repugnant to the common law. It's repugnant to the Constitution. It's repugnant
right.
to who we are as a people.
Yeah, but we could educate people with it. But how much is that book you have there? Can you tell me?
Yeah, it's only $39.95, $40.
Okay. And now you can go, I know you told me how to go there. You can go under the education when you get to the National Liberty Alliance, right? You go to the education section?
To see the video or to get the book?
Okay. For the book or those booklets, too, you have?
Well, to get the book, you go to, just go under Welcome tab and come to Books by John Darash. And the book that was my first book I've ever written was Government by Consent. It's the first one. You click on that, it'll take you to give you information on that book. I guess you got to click underneath. It'll take you
to
give you information on the book and purchase it.
What about the book? You also have booklets still, because I have one, but it's all worn out. I got to get another one.
Oh, sure, yeah. You scroll down. These are books that I've written. Then I get down to handbooks. I've got lots of handbooks here.
Okay, all right. Thank you, John. Good night, sir.
Okay. All right, thank you, Walt. Okay, we'll go to our next caller. Let's see. Nicanor, is that Nicanor? Well, you'll tell us. First name and state.
That is correct.
Nicanor?
Nicanor.
Nope. What state are you from?
California.
Okay. Oh, California. Ooh.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
as bad as New York.
Exactly. Hey, so just back to the 1938 thing. There was also in, what was it? I think it was in 1976 when they did combined it to civil action. Is that correct?
No, that was actually 1938. It was 1934 Enabling Act that the Congress put forward, and the Supreme Court acted upon it in 1938 with the rules, and really the rules was written by the Bar Association. All this stuff had been pre-written, all laying upon and ready to go upon 1871 Organic Act.
Okay.
This is not something that they're just discovering to stick this law here. You know, little by little, it's constructive. They knew exactly. They were building a building. They were building a prison. And we have been imprisoned in the prison that they have been building since 1871.
Yep. And the document by Mendelhaus that's kind of going around, is that valid?
The doctrine what?
There's a document, a letter that Mendelhaus, I believe, sent to Wilson, kind of just describing what they were going to be doing in the 30s.
Oh, you're talking about House and the little book that was written. It was sort of written in it looked like in fun, but it was really in fact. I think House is what you're talking about way back when, in the turn of the century. Yeah. I don't remember the details, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's basically about the birth certificate.
Wendell House, I think his name was. First name Wendell was House. I think. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And one of the other things is, you know, I just don't hear enough about the first paragraph of our Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I mean, when it says, when it's over there and it talks about two which...
That's the most important part. It's called the preamble.
Yeah, but everybody talks about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and all that kind of stuff and the inalienable rights, but you know, right after it talks about, you know, equals, that the fact that we're all equal in as far as our state.
Well, let me read the first paragraph that you're talking about.
Well, it says, to which the laws of nature are nature's God entitled.
That is the key. That's what makes it.
To me, that's
the covenant with God right there.
Right there, right?
That's it. That brings us, that, you know, I had an argument with Grok on this. And when I came at Grok on different perspectives, I was dealing with him like a person, you know.
Uh-huh.
It started, and I thought, Grok, you're contradicting yourself. You said over here this, and now you're saying that. You can't trust these AIs. Don't think that they're giving you the best. They're giving you some good information. Don't get me wrong, because I can use it for a lot of different things. But you got to double check, because, you know, again, they pull out what, however they work that out, depending on how you ask the question. Okay. And the other problem with AI that I found is they're too damn wordy. I mean, ask a question and you're looking for a simple answer and you get 30 paragraphs, you know. And you got to tell them, look, in 40 words or less.
Yeah.
20 words or less. And it responds to
it. AI. So the my other, I have one more thing. And that the pursuit of happiness, you know, when I talk to, I'm a hairdresser. I've been one for almost 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is when I talk to my clients about the Declaration of Independence, and oh yeah, and they life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I was like, well, you know what the pursuit of happiness is? And they go, yeah, for me to be happy. And I was like, have you ever looked it up? And when you look it up in the regular dictionary, that's what it says. But when you look it up in Black's Law Dictionary, it says the constitutional right for men to pursue their happiness means the right to pursue any lawful business or vocation
right.
in any manner not inconsistent with the equal rights of others, which may increase
the rights. You've got thousands of rights. You don't even know about them.
We have them, but the problem is when I talk to my clients about this stuff, it's like they don't want to hear it.
They need the book, but, well, therein is the major problem, is they've been well, well conditioned to be that way. Don't think that that's an accident.
No, it's indoctrination. That's what it is.
Exactly. You know, they need to be woken up. And that's why I did this video tonight, and I played it tonight, and I'm going to post it tomorrow, was because hopefully people will hear, you know, because I think it was a good introduction to the book, okay? The book covers all these things, all these problems, gives solutions.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's government, how to have, people don't know how to have government by consent. I've said this 1,000 times. I know I said it tonight. You know,
well, they don't know what a republic is
going to give us back our government, but we don't know how to keep it.
Well, they think it's a democracy, and the fact that they don't understand what Article 4, Section 4 says, you know, when I show it to them in black and white, they can't believe it.
It's not what you don't know that's going to get you. It's what you think you know and ain't so. That's what's going to kick you in the butt. And that's exactly the problem. Look, we're all guilty of this because we haven't got time to check everything out. You know, so the most important things in life we should be checking out. You know, we should be checking things out about our God. We shouldn't rely on some individual telling me who God is and anything else. I mean, fine, they could be a preacher, teacher, and give you, but you better go find for yourself, okay?
Yeah.
Same thing with anything else.
Chapter 3, right?
Huh?
I mean, hardly any ministers talk about 2 Timothy chapter 3, you know?
There's a lot of things they don't talk about, a lot of things. So let me tell you something, it's disturbing.
So anyway, I really appreciate the work you're doing. And one more thing is I have actually gone and done the process of changing my status to a national from. And,
yeah, you don't need to do that.
Well, I did it, and I'm glad I did it. And the thing is that, you know, now to be able to defend it is
yeah, but
more.
I really don't understand what that means. I guess I have to do some research on this. Here's the thing.
Are you saying the citizen Title 8, Section 1101A21 talks about the different statuses that we have. And that's
again, where is this at?
Title 8, Section 1101A21.
Section 11081?
1101.
1101. Okay, so Title 8, 1101.
Yeah, and right there, it talks about the different statuses.
Hey, I'm going to go look at that. But the bottom line is, but what are you doing in order to do that? Are you changing your citizenship or something?
No, I'm changing the status of my citizenship. The thing is...
You know, but here's your status.
Wait. We weren't U.S. citizens until the 14th Amendment.
No, that's not true. We were born here. Once you were born, and the Constitution was clear.
The national to the state.
I'm sorry, say that again?
We were born here, but our status was a national to the state, not as a U.S. citizen. U.S. citizen.
I'm going to go look. I can't really say too much until I read Title 8, 1101. I never looked into it, but I will tell you one thing. If there's anything I do know under common law, okay, I'm one of the people. The people are sovereign.
Absolutely.
It is we the people. I'm one of we the people that ordained
Absolutely.
And established this Constitution for them. That gives me status.
It's not we the Congress. It's not we the judicial. Right. It's we the people.
But the Federalists will change that. There's a group of people calling themselves the Federalists, and they're pretty sneaky because one of their main beliefs, and it was Napolitano. I was just blown away because he seemed so right on so many things. And then he said, well, the Constitution had a mistake. It never should have said we the people. It should have said we the states. Click, he's gone. You know, the problem, that is a fatal flaw. Okay,
yep.
To think something like that. And that's what the quote-unquote of today Federalists are.
Yeah.
Okay, the Federalists from day one was destructive to this union.
Well, that was a big argument between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists.
That's right. And Jefferson and Madison. Jefferson particularly said, look, we're all Federalists and we're all Republicans. Stop the nonsense. Okay? But the Federalists had these certain points. Slavery was important to them. That's why we had slavery and continued until Lincoln's day.
Yeah.
Okay? And the Democrats... The Federalist morphed in, I think it was 1901 or 1801,
yeah.
I think it was, where the Federalist morphed into the Democrat Party.
Yep.
And then they claim that Jefferson was of the Republican Party. Jefferson had no part of any party, none whatsoever.
No. And just on my own opinion, I think the reason why we the people was capitalized because it was we the people under God.
That's right. Amen to that. All right, look, I gotta move on. It's late, and I want to get one other person. But
right,
we can talk again.
Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, thank you. Okay, Brett, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What state are you from again? I forget.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. What do you got? We only got a couple of minutes.
Yeah, so consent decree. My question is if you've heard about that, and if so, what would be a way to... I'm sorry?
What's the question? Have I heard about what?
Consent decree. And if so, how would you respond to something like that?
Consent decree?
Yeah, it's a consent decree.
Consent to agree. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Your consent to agree to what?
That's what's weird. So I had this issue going on with my minor daughter, and so the court now wants so they issue a consent decree, and me looking at it, it doesn't seem like it's beneficial because it's just all these bad things or that could be potentially bad.
Let me tell you something, okay? And I know we've spoken about these issues for a couple of times over a period of time now, and I remember some of it or a good deal of it, and people better be listening, because one day you may run into a problem where they're trying to abuse you and the law and deal with your child in a way that you don't want them to have any part of. And then you're going to get stuck between a rock and a hard place. You're not going to get a lawyer that's really going to defend you, because they're going to say you got to obey their stupid laws, and you need to understand how to defend yourself in that. Because this particular case that you're dealing with, I never would have, only because I have knowledge of this now, I never would have allowed it to run as far as you have let it run. You've let it run only because you don't really know what to do, and you don't have the knowledge of the law, how to write papers, how to file papers, and how to go in there and talk about these. They have no power, no authority, and they're denying my due process, and my child is under my care. You know, all these things, okay, to be able to write them and apply them in court and shut them down and maybe even get some restitution. But again, you know, you're not going to get a lawyer to take this case to do it right, because they just won't be able to. A lawyer will not go into any court and try to take it to another court for denial of due process or denial of no authority and power over you. And the whole thing is administrative too, I think, right? It's not even in any kind of a court hearing situation. Oh, I think it's in a town, isn't it?
Well, it's a county, so it's another it's another situation where it's disorderly conduct, but they're like, you just at
well,
a place
if
where...
If you can get out of this with dealing with them and just paying a fine or some stupid thing like that, in your case, because of your lack of knowledge, I would do that. And if you want to get any justice back out of that, you may come back a year or two later after you get the knowledge to do so.
That's just it. They don't want a fine. There's no fee or
that, what do they
a signature of a consent decree.
Okay. And what are you agreeing to?
Agreeing to admit whatever to. Agreeing to an admission of something that didn't take place, and then basically a whole house arrest.
What's the consequence of that? The house arrest is the consequence?
No, that's just it. There's no consequence or anything listed.
They just want you to admit that they're right, you're wrong, that you're evil, they're good, and as you do that, that's good, we'll move on, but it becomes part of your record. I mean, what is it exactly they're looking to do?
I guess what I'm getting out of it is infiltrate the whole just hop household to be under supervision.
Oh, I've been there before, a long, long time ago. Let me tell you, that's the most evil thing in the world. I thought I was going to lose my children. Okay?
Yeah.
And this is back in my days of total ignorance of any of these things. By God's mercy, you know, we were able to get through this. But I spent a year of hell with these morons that think that they know more than I do on how I'm going to be raise my children. But in any event... the most evil court in the world, in America, is the family court. That's the most evil. There's nothing more evil than that court. And they just destroy. They're family destroyers. That's all they do. They're destroyers of the family.
So the offer was do that, and it would last only 6 months, which it doesn't seem like it would, or... So, yeah, it's either waive the rights and go that route, or...
Did you try to call for a trial by jury?
No, not yet. That's what they presented. Either waive the right and take that route, or move ahead with the whole hearing.
No hearings. You don't want a hearing. Summary judgments are BS. It's not lawful. You want to go before a trial jury. And before that, if this is going to have some kind of legal consequence upon you, then it seems to me that there's a criminal application to this whole thing. And if there's a criminal application to this whole thing, because there's some kind of legal consequence that puts you into a jeopardy, okay, then at that point, where is my grand jury indictment? You have no power, no authority over me without a grand jury indictment. You're saying I'd done something unlawful, or my child did something unlawful. Where is the indictment that you think you can come in and remove some of my freedoms by taking control and command of my family? Who gives you that power and authority? Where is that grand jury indictment? That's where I would start my argument. Again, you should be studying law. You should be reading the books. You should be really pumping up on this stuff. And I know it's a lot to take in, but you need to get knowledge. And anybody listening here that don't have knowledge, the day may come when you fall into this situation, and then you're going to wish you had the knowledge to deal with it. And believe me, you never know. Never know. Never knew when they came upon me. I was very young. I was actually about 30 years old, but that's being young to me anyway. And they were trying to take my kids. Who are these people? Anyway.
And I don't know what's behind it. I don't know what the consequence is. It's just agree to all these things and put my whole household.
You have to ask the questions. You have to ask the question in writing and demand an answer in writing. The question in writing is, okay, if you're going to violate my liberty in some way, then you're saying I committed some act that was against the law. And if it was against the law that you can take my liberty away, my unalienable right that God gave me, my child, for me to take care and supervise, my child, didn't give it to the state, gave it to me, and you're going to try to take that away from me for a six-month period, well, then that sounds to me like there's some kind of an act that seems to be a crime of some type, because you can't just do that. You can't take anything away from me. My children is, as my body is my first piece of property, my children is my property. Until they're of age, they are my property. They're under my wing and my authority. And I need to be dealing with that just and right, you know, before the Lord. But the thing is the state has no power or authority over that. You need to go read your Fifth Amendment, your Fourth Amendment, your Seventh Amendment. Go read that. See how it applies to you. How are they taken from you? A right. That's what they're doing. If they're trying to take a right away from you, then you're claiming there's a criminal act here.
Right.
And if there's a criminal act, where is the grand jury indictment? And again, I would have quashed this a long time ago by writing a paper that they've given a denial of due process. They have no power over my person. They may have subject matter jurisdiction, and I doubt they really in this case have that. But they may have subject matter jurisdiction, but they don't have personam jurisdiction, jurisdiction over your daughter, jurisdiction over you, your family. They don't have that jurisdiction. Only the law, common law, has that jurisdiction. 12 people of your peers. And before they can do anything with that, you got to get a grand jury indictment. Now, they're trying to hide and play games with it. That's what I see.
If requesting, you said a jury trial?
Well, first of all, you want them to establish exactly what the situation is. If it's a civil case, well, you can't come with a civil case to take my right away. If they want to have jurisdiction over your family for 6 months, that's taken a right away from you. By what power or authority do they seem to act to do that? That's the question. They don't have that power or authority. Now, if you're going to say it's a crime, well, okay, where's the grand jury indictment? If it's not a crime, then go away and leave me alone. You have nothing on me. Now, again, you have to be careful how you talk to these people. I'm talking like a smart aleck to some degree. I mean, I don't even talk that way in court. But I put it to them the way it has to be put.
Well, a lot of it is through the public defender. I mean, they just came out of nowhere and said that they're the attorney for my child, and they must deal with my child.
No, they won't. Who gave them that fiduciary authority over your child? Did God give that to them, or did you give that to them? Because there's only two people that can give that to them. One is God, and they surely didn't give it to him. Okay, he surely didn't give it to them. And the other one is you, and you're surely not going to give it to them. So by what authority, what fiduciary authority do you have? What judge thinks they have that power or authority to do something like that? And what kind of a court are we in anyway? What's the jurisdiction? That's what the other thing you got to ask. You're under U.S. code, not U.S. code, some New York state codes, whatever state codes that they have on you that they're trying to apply. And it makes it look, again, this all, they're making it look like this is a criminal thing here. You need to read the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments. Focus in on the 4th, 5th, and 7th particularly, okay?
Okay.
And start thinking about what they're doing and how to apply these words, these things upon them. And again, you know, it's a shame that people have never been taught this in school. No child in America, no free-minded individuals with unalienable rights should not be in a position where they don't know how to walk into a court and take control of their business. They just should not be, because lawyers are thieves. God has a lot of bad things to say about lawyers. He never said, I have never heard in the Bible one good thing about a lawyer. Okay, that's how bad these lawyers are. You know, it's all about money to these people. And they're part of the gang. They're not on your side. Never will be. You can pay them all the money you want, but their first allegiance is back to the court, whether people don't realize that or not, unfortunately. You know? All right, we got to go, though. We could talk some more if you want next week.
Thank you, John.
Okay. All right. We're going to end our program here. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And if you haven't bought the book, buy the book. It supports NLA at the same time. Good night.